You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is David Brickley.
Ultimately, people like people, and they want to kind of get invested into a human and someone that kind of talks like them or acts like them or maybe is questioning the same things they're questioning. And I think this kind of buttoned up mentality of, hi, I'm David Brickley, and this is CNN News, and people just don't relate to it as much as they did maybe back in the day with your local NBC or back when there was four or five channels.
After working with his first ever client, Kobe Bryant, David used that as motivation to launch STN Digital in 2013 and has since grown an award-winning team of some of the best talent in the industry. STN Digital is an expert at launching brands and building highly engaged audiences. STN is a social-first marketing agency and provides services ranging from 360 marketing, social media engagement, paid media, on-site activations, and anything in between. STN Digital works with some of the biggest brands in the world, including Amazon, the Olympics, NBC, Fox, and HBO, to name a few. David is also the host of two podcasts, Business of Social and Entrepreneur Rap, which was ranked by Forbes as a top 10 podcast every business owner should listen to. David, welcome to On Brand.
Nick, what's going on? Thank you so much for that nice intro.
Well, it is thrilling to have you here. It's must be an occasion for you to have the microphones flipped around the other way and be the one answering questions.
I appreciate it. I'll try to be a good guest based on all my background in it. So
you know, what is it that they say that doctors make the worst patients?
Yeah, potentially. We'll see.
Maybe it's different with with podcast hosts.
I think so. And
guests. So your work at STN Digital is certainly award winning and vast. When it comes to being a social first agency, you know, we talked a lot about that at the kind of the outset, the birth of social media, because there were traditional agencies and then there were other social agencies. What does the concept of social first mean to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, also talking to a lot of clients and colleagues in the industry, I think what happened was, you know, Madison Avenue, traditional ad agencies, obviously focused on 360, traditional marketing, commercial development, things like that. And then as social media came along, they tried to tack on social with a lot of their clients. Oh, yeah, we do social as well. Almost like a bullet point on the invoice that they would say, yeah, we can help you on social media. And maybe when social media first came out, that was okay. But as you know, it's so nuanced now. It changes every month, it seems like. There's so many platforms coming out, so many features that you really have to I always say geek out over this stuff, but B, you have to just really eat, live, and breathe social media to really understand how to pull those levers and use it the right way. So when we say social first, I mean, we are every single day with these brands, content calendars, analytics, paid media, you know, talking to our reps at the Facebook, Instagrams, Twitters, TikToks of the world, and making sure that we can really maximize the opportunity across all these social platforms. So I think that's a key difference, is really starting with social. And the other stuff kind of falls into place.
So when it comes to brands and social media, what is one of the biggest challenges when it comes to brand activation on social? Here we are, you know, we've kind of, it's almost been like a quick immediate snapshot of immediate history talking about these early days, but social media has been around for a decade plus.
Yeah.
So where are we at with brands and social and some of the bigger challenges?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is a lot of brands made the mistake early on. And I always use this analogy. It would be it'd be disingenuous and silly to take a radio advertisement and throw it on TV, right? Because you would totally be missing out on the visual medium that is television. And the same goes with social media. When you're just throwing an ad that maybe works in print or works on television, you're throwing it across all your social media platforms. It's not resonating because these consumers and these people that follow you on these different social platforms are expecting a different way to be spoken to, are expecting different content. And that varies, right? Across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok especially, right? Where when you're on TikTok, you are definitely expecting a different type of message and a different way to interact with content than you are on Facebook. It just is what it is. And I think the biggest problem I see with brands is just having one plan or one commercial spot or whatever it may be and just, you know, plastering across all their different platforms. And that just doesn't work. It's not genuine and it's not authentic to what you're trying to do with your audience. So that's the one thing and the challenge I see, because it does take extra time, right? You have to create what is your spot or what is your promo or what does your campaign look like on TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, television, print, billboard. It takes a lot more time. But if you take that time, I think it resonates so much more with the consumer.
So when it comes to those highly engaged audiences on the various social channels, and I realize as we talk about differences in social networks that it's dangerous to paint in broad strokes.
Yes, yes.
But for the purpose of a snapshot of some of the differences in audience engagement tactics across social networks, are there broad strokes that are useful
in terms of the content you're posting across these platforms?
Yeah.
Or how you're interacting with the audience? Yeah, I mean, listen, I think what's good is it's not as hard as it seems. I mean, when you look at it works on TikTok, that also is working really well on Instagram Reels. Why? Because it's a different way that people are entering into this feature. On Instagram Reels, for instance, you have these, you know, mostly 15 to 20 second clips that you're scrolling through kind of aimlessly and you're stopping when something grabs your attention. That works well for TikTok as well. So a lot of these things, I think sometimes it's just simply resizing an amazing graphic or an amazing video, 4x5 on Instagram, more of your 9x16 on TikTok, and that's all you have to do. But even those little things are going to help you two ways. One, the audience is expecting that type of content to be formatted a certain way. And then two, the algorithm, right? So these social networks and platforms, they really want you to play within their boundaries. So sometimes simply by just sizing it the correct way, the way they want you to size it, can exponentially get you that much more reach. So those are the small tweaks, even if it's a small video that may work across all platforms, just making some of those small tweaks so it reaches the most eyeballs.
So you alluded to what for many is the I'd say the $1 million question, but it might have a higher price tag than that in some cases. That big desire to capture attention.
Yes.
Audience attention is all over the place, and it's so hard to get folks to stop. But many clients present with that problem of we need something that stands out. We need something that captures attention. How do you handle that need? Is that the right question, or is there something you can prescribe?
Yeah, oftentimes it's we want to go viral. Make us go viral. And that is, if anybody tells you they could do that for you, it's really impossible, unless you have a certain amount of budget, I guess, if you want to do it that way. I think when it comes to reach and distribution, you know, there's only so much you can do organically at the end of the day. So you can come up with the best campaign. You can come up with a really, really unique perspective, but you are going to be limited to the algorithm, right? So even really amazing brands are looking at 3 to 5% engagement. So that means if you have 100,000 followers, you're lucky if you get 3 to 5,000 people that see your content. That's a pretty healthy average engagement, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So you almost look at it like a baseball player, right? If they're hitting 3 times out of 10, they're an all-star, because that's just what the average shows you. So I think adjusting your expectations, but when you really want to make a splash, obviously paid media can kind of guarantee you. A lot of these platforms are now pay to play, but also looking at your ecosystem and your distribution levers, whether it's with partners, colleagues, other sub brands that you may work with, and then, you know, influencer marketing, going to where your consumer is. If you don't have the consumer that you can guarantee to market or hit based on your current organic following or your email list or whatever it may be, then like every other medium, right, you have to go out and find, okay, this influencer, this brand really speaks to my target demographic. So I'm going to work with them and see if they can post my content and things like that. So those are ways that you can increase your ability to get more eyeballs on your content.
Well, you mentioned some really good items that I feel like sometimes we're quick to grab on to the easy stuff, just paying for additional reach. But
right.
What you talked about with partners and sub brands, and a lot of this isn't easy work, but this dot connecting can sometimes, it seems like, lift up what it is that you're trying to elevate in
yep.
in a powerful way.
Well, and you know, you may have saw this campaign, but Disney Plus, I think right around the time they were launching Disney Plus, they had everybody in their entire ecosystem have a conversation on Twitter and talk about it. So from an ESPN who's owned by Disney to a Marvel who is now owned by Disney, all those different things, and all those different brands were interacting at the same time with each other. And that just went quote unquote viral, and everybody in the industry saw that. But all they did was tap into their own ecosystem. And I think oftentimes so many brands don't do that and don't think that first. When you look at a company like Warner Media, they now own Warner Brothers, TNT, TBS, Bleacher Report. The list goes on and on and on. So there are some fun ways when you have a, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion that you can really bring everybody in your portfolio together and have a really fun campaign that spans across all those different audiences because you own them. And I think oftentimes people don't tap into that enough when they have those free levers they can pull from a reach standpoint.
It kind of gets me thinking, is that portfolio mindset something that is only for, I mean, it's obviously easily seen in players of that size and scope, but
yeah.
Are there ways that other businesses, brands can utilize that thinking?
Yeah. You know, I've seen it work really well on the smaller business side is working with ambassadors. And the way you can do that is by really giving them early access to product, by maybe even seeding some product for free. You'd be amazed what people do for a free hoodie. And once that happens, you're able to kind of get them in your community and say, hey, listen, we're launching this new product. You know, we want to give you, we're going to give it to you first, like a week before it launches. And just tell us how, not even ask for anything. Just like, thank you so much for being a loyal customer. And before you know it, that value, the ambassadors are sharing on their social media, their Instagram stories, and they're talking about it, and they're building up, you know, a little bit of this energy prior to the release. So I think if you don't have any sub brands, if you haven't really encompassed any type of reach across your portfolio, I think there's really easy, cheap ways to do that with starting an ambassador or a customer loyalty program and just making sure when you drop that new product that you can get it across 50 accounts rather than just relying solo on your own.
That's a really good point, because I think sometimes and a good decoding of what a big brand and what big brands are doing that is useful and accessible. Because I think a lot of times we look at examples like that and we see, oh, wow, all the Marvel properties on
right.
social media shared the new
yep.
trailer today. That's smart. Must be nice.
Yeah.
But you
yep.
can shift gears and apply that with ambassadors. But all of these things take time, and that's and thought and strategy in how to implement, and that's not always where we want to seem like we want to spend the time or the money on some of those
right.
the people strategic connections there.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's a tough thing with anything, right? You know, if you want to have you want to be in shape, it takes a lot of time to eat right and go to the grocery store and go to the gym and hire a trainer. I think things in life that are successful or you end up getting a lot of reward out of end up being difficult. And I think really great marketing, really amazing branding can be a lot of time, a lot of resources, a lot of money to get it done right. But I think you notice some of these, you know, brands over time that are just best in class at branding and best in class at marketing and being, you know, loyal to their consumer. You can tell. I mean, they're putting a lot. I think Apple puts a lot of time into how you unbox every single item that you buy, whether it's a laptop, an iPad, an Apple Watch. They want that to be an experience. They want it to feel super upper class and feel like it's a luxury as you kind of rifle through all those different things inside those Apple boxes. So, you know, I think, you know, those are all calculated by some of the top brands in the world. And yeah, I mean, this stuff takes a lot of time for sure.
So as we're recording this, we're here in Q4 of 2021, which has certainly been a strange year after another strange year, moving into what we hope is a slightly less strange year, but... strangeness aside, it is also time to think about budgets. And as we talk about all of these different places, all of these different forms of content, all of these different investments to make, and acknowledging the aforementioned strangeness, how should brands think about planning for all of these tasks coming up in another new year?
Yeah, I would just look. It's really difficult to not know brand by brand. I would have different, I guess, I would have different advice based on the brand. But, you know, I know consumer spending is up 50% year over year looking at the summer of 2021. You know, we've seen our company grow double in size, triple in size over the last, you know, year and a half, because I think what COVID did, I've been saying this a lot, is it woke up a lot of Fortune 500 brands. It woke up, I think, every small business that, if you don't have a digital or a social solution, it's not really a nice to have anymore. It's a need to have. And you saw brands that took that really seriously before COVID, and they were able to stay afloat or to continue business, and others that didn't, it really hurt them. So I think a lot of marketers are understanding the value prop of digital marketing, of social marketing, of influencers, and all these different things, opposed to maybe some of the traditional marketing levers that you can pull in the past. And, you know, I think COVID woke a lot of people up, right? The conferences, the billboards, the traditional marketing that a lot of brands leaned on were no longer there. And now they started to dig in a little bit to social, and they saw that. So if there is one, broad, you know, piece of advice that I would tell any brand, is really look under the hood at your social strategy, your digital strategy, your email strategy, because those are the customers that you can really own, you can market to, and, you know, no matter what happens from a pandemic standpoint, you can still reach them regardless of what's going on that standpoint.
So in shifting gears, you are the host of not one, but two podcasts.
Yeah.
Business of Social and Entrepreneur Rap. In looking ahead, we've talked a lot about these growing forms of social media and all of the intricacies therein. As we've seen podcasting grow, it seems like we're also getting to a place where there's some real platform dominance starting to emerge in this space as well. What does that mean to both you as a podcaster and to brands with podcasts?
Yeah, it's funny. I think I saw a stat, and you get a kick out of this. 95% of podcasts end before episode 3. So everybody, and you know this, Nick, like everybody wants to start a podcast, but back to your earlier question about time and resources, it takes a lot of time to not only book the guests, but obviously interview them and edit the shows and market the shows and those different things. So every brand wants a podcast. Every, you know, celebrity wants to launch a podcast, but usually after episode 2 or 3, they're like, it's too much work. I don't want to do that. but, you know, I started podcasting back in, you know, talking Lakers basketball, honestly, back in 2007. And back then, that was kind of the first, what I saw a peak when it came to podcasting. It went through a little lull there, I would say, from, 2012 to 2015. I remember the Serial podcast came out,
yeah,
kind of that drama. And I feel like that was the moment where everybody's, okay, podcasts are cool again. And then I think it's never been better. And then Spotify's given, you know, Joe Rogan $150 million a year or whatever. So I think ultimately with this consumer on demand type of mentality, you know, people want their Spotify and their playlist. They want to be in their car and put their podcast on and not have to trust the radio, I guess, to give them the best piece of content as they're going down the road. So, yeah, I mean, you can learn so much from it. And no matter what your no matter what's interesting to you, you can find someone that's talking in your lane. So I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's interesting because you look at that, and we talk about it being such a great thing that's like this great big hockey stick spike in activity. But you look at the numbers, and it's actually been this kind of slow and steady build that is really getting even deeper. But I think,
and one thing I'll say too is I was just watching some content recently. I mean, Joe Rogan has 10 times the audience that a CNN does. So you're talking about people like you and I starting to get our news and information more from some of these top podcasts opposed to the traditional mainstream media, which a lot of people could say is a really good thing because there's not as much corporate ownership over that. And maybe we can get some, weed through the noise a little bit with some people that are just telling you how it is. But it's really interesting. I mean, the power that a Barstool has with their podcast numbers and a Joe Rogan and these different people that Tim Ferriss, these different people that have really done it the right way in terms of growing their audience. It's pretty insane the reach they have and the amount of ears that they have opposed to maybe some of those Fortune 500 brands that we were talking about earlier that dominated the radio and TV space for so long.
Well, it is interesting, true, and it seems like you need some clarity of message before any brand that may have the platform in another format. You have to do a lot more to pull up to that podcasting microphone to cultivate an audience and to translate that into audio listeners as well.
And I think what we're finding too in this, Gen Z millennials 2021 age is ultimately people like people, and they want to kind of get invested into a human and someone that kind of talks like them or acts like them or maybe is questioning the same things they're questioning. And I think this kind of buttoned up mentality of, hi, I'm David Brickley and this is CNN News, and people just don't relate to it as much as they did maybe back in the day with your local NBC or back when there was four or five channels. So I think this idea, and this goes for social too, right? People want to interact with people more than they do with brands. So you find a lot of the brands that either have a name that's actually behind their social platforms, or they're kind of talking like their audience would talk in a DM or in a text message. They're starting to get a lot more audience, a lot more engagement than maybe your traditional button-up brands that sound like a PR machine. So I'm also noticing that a lot too, from a podcast standpoint, social standpoint. People want to interact with people, and that's why I think there's such a investment with some of these people.
Well said. Well, speaking of brands that we want to interact with, David, it's time for me to ask you for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yeah, I'm gonna. The first one that comes to mind for me is Liquid Death Mountain Water. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, Nick,
but
they are a water company. Their can of water looks like it's a Corona beer, but all it is mountain water. And they are the most followed water brand on Instagram. They beat out Fiji, Voss, Aquafina, all the, Arrowhead, all the water companies that just dominate the industry. But they're such a disruptor in the industry because, first of all, their can is kind of odd. It's really definitely an icebreaker because you're holding this what looks like a beer can and all it is water. But secondly, the first ad they ever came out with, they're literally like waterboarding somebody as they're talking about how great their water is. And then recently, they had Tony Hawk take a pint of blood, I think, or whatever, or not a pint, but a shot of blood out of his stream, you may have saw it, and then painted a bunch of skateboards. They're really being a disruptor in the water space. Because, water, if you think about it, right, is very traditional. It's glaciers. It's clean. It's pH levels. All those different things that every water company just automatically markets the same way. And they came in and said, let's try something different. Let's shock and awe a lot of people. Let's get people to look at us more like a rock and roll band opposed to a water brand. And they're just doing some really interesting things that make you laugh, that also kind of shock you a little bit, but ultimately it disrupts the space in a big way. So that's a brand that's made me smile, and I think they're doing a really good job disrupting the space right now.
Awesome. Well, at the very least, beyond all of that, even the name Liquid Death will, if nothing else, will make you smile.
And they've done a good job, too. They built really a lifestyle brand. They have like a pinball machine on their website that costs $9,000. They have hoodies and shirts and skateboards, and they've really tapped into a target demo that started like in the kind of rock and roll and maybe the skateboard industry, and now they're the official water of Coachella, I think. So, but they're in Whole Foods. They're in mainstream that in that regard, too. So, but yeah, they really found a way to, again, they found a great way to build that community first and get those brand loyalists and those ambassadors kind of early on, so they were able to extend their message to, the broader public.
Awesome. David, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so if you Google David Brickley, B-R-I-C-K-L-E-Y, you'll probably see a lot of my platforms like Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. The podcast is called Business Social. We do it much like you, kind of at least once a week with different people across the space. And we find it to be really interesting to people like you and I that just really want to learn more about branding, marketing, social, and just a digital landscape that, again, changes every 6 weeks or so. So it's important to keep your thumb on the pulse. And then, yeah, our agency is STN Digital, STN.digital on your browser if you want to check us out.
Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. David, thanks for being on brand with us.
You bet. Thanks, Nick.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. Until next time, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.